I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It is 9:35, I guess, Thursday, March 18th, 2011. I want to turn the mic down a little bit because of the echo.
I'd like to be heard.
Yeah, we can definitely hear it. I'm joined today with my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis. Senator Olson is not in his chair, but he'll be back here shortly. Senator McGuire, Thomas, and Egan, and myself, Stedman. And today, I should say this morning, we'll finish up this morning. We're going to finish the governor's FY12 capital budget, which is SB 46. Recommendations. First, we're going to hear from the University of Alaska. Then we have one item in the governor's office. We'll finish with Ms. Rayfield from the Office of Management and Budget, who will walk us through the language section of the bill and the final wrap-up comments. And then we're going to be back here this evening at 5 p.m. to take public testimony. And we're going to start this morning with the University of Alaska, and they've come with adequate backup. And if they can introduce themselves for the record, who they represent, and then maybe after that, before you start your presentation, just a brief comment on why the president is not with you guys today. And then we'll go through your items. And then I think after we go through your three items, we have a chart or a couple of display items you want to talk about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michelle Rizik, Associate Vice President of Budget for the University of Alaska.
I'm Kit Duke, Chief Facilities Officer for the University.
And Mr. Chairman, the President had wanted to join this meeting and sends his regrets. He had a death in the family, and so he has sent us along to carry on the message for the University's capital budget.
Okay, and that's understandable, so, but we do appreciate being let it be known to the committee members on why the president's not here. So appreciate that, and we send our condolences to his family. Go ahead and start with item number 51679, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to walk through the three projects that are included in the governor's budget, and then, as you mentioned, Kit Duke, the Chief Facilities Officer, is going to spend just a few minutes discussing UA's sustainment funding plan for UA facilities, which the committee should have a copy of that chart, and it's also up on the screen, and we'll spend a few minutes at the end just going through that. The first project included in the governor's budget is annual renewal and repurposing project number 51679 for $2 million. The University of Alaska owns and maintains nearly 400 buildings, totaling 6.7 million gross square feet with an adjusted value that currently exceeds $2 billion. With this additional amount of funding for $2 million for annual renewal and repurposing, it's the first year in an effort to get to a property maintenance sustainment funding strategy. An annual investment will extend the life of older buildings needing major system replacements. Some examples of R&R work includes roof and floor replacement, switching out mechanical and electrical equipment such as boilers, replacing lab fixtures, and bringing fire and sprinkler system up to code. With the ability to make capital investments annually, it really aids in preventing in adding to the deferred maintenance backlog. Included in the detail is our project descriptions, or a list of projects for each of the campuses in priority order. The second project included in the governor's...
I could just stop there. I see you've got these items in priority order by campus, but how do we prioritize them in the entirety, or how do we deal with this listing? There's what do you got here? $1 billion, $100 million?
Mr. Chairman, the distribution of funds, depending on the level of funding available for the university, we calculate an index that's based on the size and age of facilities at each of the campuses, and so based on the index, depending on the funding available, the amount of funding that we get for R&R is distributed accordingly.
Okay, and then why is it showing in the document here $2,012,000, which is the appropriation request, and then $50,013,000 through 17? Why isn't that, why is there a big gap there from $2 million to $50 million?
Mr. Chairman, Kit Duke will get into more specifics on that when she presents the overall plan, but the short answer to that is the University of Alaska, as part of the request in FY12, we had requested $25 million being the first phase of a two-year phase to get up to $50 million, which is the annual investment that we need for facilities to not add to our deferred maintenance backlog. And so what is shown here is what the annual amount necessary is, and so that's why there's a big jump. We had requested $25 million in the Board of Regents budget, and the governor supported $2 million in his budget.
Okay. Next item, then. See no other questions on this item.
The second project included in the governor's budget is federal receipt authority for capital projects. This is request number 4321 for $30 million. This request is an estimation of potential federal receipt authority needed for FY12 through FY17 for projects at the Maine and community campuses. The University of Alaska continues to pursue federal funding sources, and this receipt authority gives us the ability to accept that funding. Prior federal receipt authority has been used for projects that we receive funding for related to Title III.
Okay. Next item.
The third item included in the governor's budget is deferred maintenance renewal and repurposing project number 45326 for $37.5 million. This reflects of the governor's five-year program for deferred maintenance of $100 million annually. The University of Alaska will receive $37.5 million of that amount. The deferred maintenance and renewal funding reduces the backlog of maintenance for the university facilities. The current deferred maintenance backlog is in the upwards of $800 million, and this funding is needed to reduce that level of backlog to a level that lessens the amount of funding necessary to take care of emergency response items.
Okay. Do we have any questions on this item? Okay. That concludes the request in the governor's capital budget, but you wanted to take a few moments and talk about the maintenance concerns that the university has. So we're going to go ahead and do that now to help, even though we've gone over this before earlier in the session. This will be kind of a refresher for the committee members as we go forward.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, if I may make one comment, the chart that's included for the committees, it looks like this, and it's the end of this chart. It's a lot easier to follow if we go through the steps of it, which the Chief Facilities Officer Duke is going to go through very quickly.
That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm having a weak moment. We'll walk through it.
We'll go quickly. If you look at this chart as I put pieces on it, I think it will help you to understand the complexity of the full chart. On the left-hand side, we're portraying the information about historic deferred maintenance. The scale for that is on the right-hand side in green to match the information on the chart. The bars represent the capital investment that the state has made in deferred maintenance since 2006. There's actually more history than that, but I decided that 6 years worth of it would probably give us the picture. So in that time, even though we were making capital investment, we went from a $615 million backlog up to $750 million. So that we haven't actually broken the cycle of adding to the deferred maintenance backlog, even with the amount of money that's been invested over this period of time. So one of the things that President Gamble talked to you all about in the overview on the operating budget was our desire to stop this cycle of adding to the backlog. So that's what this chart is going to depict for you. So now we're adding the information about the annual maintenance money that we spend, the dark blue. A number of years ago, the Board of Regents decided that the university would try to invest adequately in annual maintenance, preventive and scheduled maintenance, and that they would start investing in recapitalization. That's what the light blue represents. And recapitalization is the money that you put into a building that extends the life of it. you replace roofing systems, you replace heating or electrical systems, because usually the structure of a building will last a lot longer than everything else that's inside it. So then what the red represents historically is the deficit in annual spending that should be occurring in order not to add to the maintenance backlog. And you can see that it's a considerable amount of money. Now, our efforts to try to break this cycle, we started looking at the governor's program of 5 years of $37.5 million for the university. What would that do? And actually, it does help, but it doesn't make the chart, you know, it doesn't make the line start on a real downward trend. And what we determined was that in order to make that happen, we need about a $200 million investment to get rid of the serious backlog needs, and then you see a real drop in the level of maintenance backlog. And what we're trying to do here is to get to something that we can live with. The $362 million worth of backlog is something we think we can live with because it causes us to stop spending our annual maintenance money on emergency response, which is always more expensive than if you're doing preventive or scheduled maintenance. Emergency maintenance means you're replacing sheetrock and ceiling tiles and flooring materials instead of just fixing the pipe that was wearing out. Then now what we're showing you is the amount of light blue investment that needs to be made in addition to the dark blue that the university is already committing to do. Again, this is the amount of capital reinvestment that's needed. And it's based on nationally accepted formulas for what is required in order to extend the life of buildings annually, so that you have a program that says, you know, I need to replace the roofs on so many of my buildings, I need to, you know, replace key components in the heating system, finishes, things of that nature, and you have a program of that kind of maintenance that you do every year for the $50 million. And you'll see that we continue to run through the investment in deferred maintenance. We get that line, the green line, down to a livable amount, and hopefully we have the capital reinvestment necessary to make us have a sustainable funding plan for all of our buildings. So any questions?
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, through the chair. Have you applied for any of the energy efficiency loans under Senate Bill 220?
We have applied for the energy audit funds, which is the first step.
Okay.
And we've submitted that about 2 weeks ago.
Great. Thank you. Just through the chair, there are about $280 million in that fund, so that should help you come a long way.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Just a brief comment. I know there's been some interest by the university, from what I heard, to go ahead and bond $100 million. I assume then next year you'd bond another $100 million to hit your target at $137 million this year. Next year, if the governor puts in, with the support of the legislature, $37 with the support of the governor. Going forward, but the concern I have with that fiscal model is the university goes out and bonds $200 million over 2 years for maintenance on projects that are, you know, we're going to still be paying the bonds when we're going to have to go back and refurbish issues. So I'm not so sure that doesn't just create another financial challenge out 10, 15 years from now, while we still have life left on the bond and we have new members in the legislature and new members at the university sitting here in this room wondering what, you know, process was gone through to make that decision. So I just caution the university on issuing debt for maintenance. It's not a good strategy in the long run. And we'll, I'm sure as time goes on, we have as much interest in not letting the university fall down around its own foundation as the university does. And there's a lot of other other needy items around the state, too, that, that we have to attend to here that's, you know, beyond the scope of just the university. So,
Mr. Chairman,
that's worth.
Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to accept cash, but we wanted to show you that we're committed to trying to do something to address this problem.
Like I mentioned to your executive vice president, relations, it's kind of like the Blazing Saddles, you know. If you don't give me the money, I'm going to do the bonds. You know, so that's kind of tough strategy. But anyway, we have any other questions, concerns? Okay, thank you for coming in today. And we'll, I'm sure we'll have some discussion on this item as we go forward, not only this year, but for the next couple of years. Because energy and deferred maintenance are two big issues that we're dealing with around this day. Next up, we have the OMB director. Well, we got Linda Perez here. In the office of the governor, excuse me. We'll have a brief at ease. I see we've got the Office of the Governor up. We're a little short of money, but we'll listen to the proposal.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Linda Perez, Administrative Services Director for the Office of the Governor. We have one item in the Governor's capital budget for $100,000 for the Division of Elections, which represents an additional HAVA grant for voter place accessibility statewide. We have a corresponding transaction to this request in Section 5B, which is the receipt of that federal money into the election fund to fund this request.
Well, we might be able to scrounge up $100,000 for the governor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious where the locations are. Can we get a list?
I could get that from the Division of Elections. This will be the sixth such grant they've received, and it's for all the statewide polling places. I will get a list for you.
I'm just curious about the locations.
I will get a list for you.
Do you have any other questions on that? Okay. We'll see what we can do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
From the budget.
Thank you.
And then next up, I guess we have the language section with Ms. Rayfield. It'll just take us a minute to grab that particular section.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Rayfield. I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. I know that you have covered a great deal of Senate Bill 46, the Governor's capital budget, already in a very short period of time, and we appreciate your efforts on that. There are 12 sections. The language section of the bill starts on page 45 with section 4. Mr. Chairman, the section 4 is lines 1 through 13. This is for federal and other program receipts. This is what we typically refer to as the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee provisions. There are three subparts, A, B, and C, and they have to do with the receipt of federal or other funds that could be considered by Legislative Budget and Audit when the legislature is not in full session. There are also some specific language that would allow state authorization to be reduced under subpart B if other funds were received, or under subpart C to limit our expenditures to what's actually received. Section 5, lines 17 through 20 of the bill, Mr. Chairman, is for fund capitalizations. Subpart A is for the AGIA reimbursement fund. We are requesting $160 million for the AGIA reimbursement for eligible allowable expenditures under that project. Through FY11, you have appropriated, Mr. Chairman, $185 million for those allowable expenditures. This additional request, Mr. Chairman. This will, with the additional $160 million, there will be approximately $345 million available for reimbursements under the AGIA project. Subpart B is the capitalization for...
Can I just stop there for a minute, just for a note, footnote for the committee? We've had in the subcommittee process dealing with revenue, Department of Revenue, we've had them come forward and give us a quarterly breakdown of the AGIA reimbursement, both historically and going forward. So we'll get that information out to the committee members, make sure everybody has that. And then we can have some discussion here on after you guys look at that data, what the committee feels is an appropriate course of action. Senator Hoffman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What was the thought behind using the revenue source that you have here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, the governor's proposed to use the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation funds. I know we've talked about this at earlier meetings. It is a fund that was set aside a few years ago. About $300 million was put into the fund. There has been some discussion about whether or not that was set aside specifically for gas line expenditures or any other capital appropriation. It is... for all practical purposes, unrestricted general funds, and the governor has proposed to utilize this this funding source for AGIA specifically the last couple of years, and I know the legislature has not accepted that and has instead used other general funds for that purpose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think as another item I'd like to committee members to consider also is the Alaska Housing Corporation, little fund source we had. We had initially set that aside 4 years ago or so in the event, or 5 years, whatever it was, let's go back and look, in the event that we had substantial revenue shortfalls in the state, that we would have several hundred million dollars set aside so we could use that for federal match to get federal money and keep our capital budget moving and keep our infrastructure up in the state, and now our financial condition has substantially improved since then. So I think the committee members should give it some thought on if they want to take that Alaska Housing Capital Corporation fund, which is probably around what, $370 million?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct.
Okay, $370 million, and then slide that over, put it in the SBR or another savings mechanism, and then just remove that and clean up the bookwork a little bit. It would help alleviate some of the budgetary confusion, because I think every governor, including this and the last two, and now the current governor, always want to go in and they have a little different viewpoint on what that money should be used for. So that would help alleviate that situation. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The governor didn't request those dollars, and we put those dollars in, so I think we should be the ones that are deciding that fund. There may be recommendations such as this, but I was wondering, has there been any thought given to using the permanent funding reserve account for this expenditure?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, I've not had any conversations about using permanent fund earnings for this project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
I just want the committee members to have things to think about. When we start setting policy, so no one's surprised.
Okay. Pushing the envelope.
Ms. Rayfield.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Section 5B is the request to appropriate the $100,000 in federal receipts into the Federal Help America Vote Act Election Fund, and that was what Ms. Perez referred to in her presentation to you a moment ago. Section 6, Mr. Chairman, lines 26 through 31 on page 45 has two parts. Part A is a fund transfer of $22 million into the Alaska Capital Income Fund. These are the estimated earnings from the principal of the Amerita Hess settlement, and the Permanent Fund Corporation brings those estimates forward. So it's $22 million that would be transferred into the Alaska Capital Income Fund. Subpart B, Mr. Chairman, is a fund transfer of $25 million, again, from the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation fund that we just spoke about for renewable energy grants. Mr. Chairman, Section 7 is on page 46 of the bill, lines 1 through 5. This is for insurance claims and basically authorizes settlements from insurance claims to be deposited to the general fund or to a specific state agency to mitigate loss. This is, I think, standard language that comes before you annually. Section 8, page line 6 through 11, is for the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska Impact Grant Program. As you know, this is an annual program. We are estimating to receive $5.4 million for grants to communities that are eligible. The Department of Community Commerce and Economic Development does an annual grant program. In the amended budget that we brought forward specific grants and a description of those grants that are proposed for authorization in the FY12 budget.
Senator Egan, and you have to catch the plane.
I do. I'm leaving, Mr. Chair, but I think the amount in line 9 is a typo, because that's not, it doesn't say $5.4 million.
Or it's just a zero vote.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Egan, that is definitely a typo. Thank you.
Save a lot of money or lose a lot of money.
Now that you drop that bomb on the table, you're leaving town.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you'll be back Monday?
Be back Sunday morning.
Okay, Monday's meeting, okay.
If you call a meeting, call me.
Okay, Ms. Rayfield, next item.
Mr. Chairman, the next section 9 starts on line 12, the Alaska Energy Authority. Again, in the amended package, we proposed to move this. This was actually a duplicate, and it's in the operating budget. It's a $2 million appropriation of interest earnings for the Renewable Energy Fund Administration. Subpart B is the balance of the Rail Belt Energy Fund, estimated to be about $65.7 million for the Susitna Hydroelectric Project. I believe the committee talked with the department about that. Section 10 of the bill begins on line 20. It's for $35,000 to Life Donor Alaska Services. This is a program that supports and the importance of making anatomical gifts.
Isn't that an item that's normally added by the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, it may very well be one that you have added. It's been, I think, an annual appropriation, and we put it in the budget for your consideration.
Next item is the lapse information.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the lapse provisions relate to the various sections of the bill, and of course the final section, Section 12, is the effective date of the bill, which is July 1 of 2012.
Okay. Do we have any questions on the language? Senator Tom.
Just one, and that's on the Section 6 fund transfers. Do you know the balance of the fund at this point in time, the Alaska Capital Income Fund, and who is managing that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, the balance is about $424 million, and that's, of course, managed by the Permanent Fund Corporation.
Managed by who, I'm sorry?
The Permanent Fund Corporation.
Okay. Thank you.
Almost like a subcomponent of it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's come to my attention that you had brought forward some potential additions to the capital budget through amendments. Even though you're past the deadline, the technical deadline, you'd like some additional consideration for other projects. I haven't had a chance to look at it. What are you going to ask the committee to consider?
Mr. Chairman, as you know, we have tried very hard to minimize the number of amendments that are submitted to the legislature following the 30-day statutory deadline. I will have a few very small supplemental amendments, and there will be a significant amendment having to do with federal authorization for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I think you have talked with the department about that. It's our opportunity perhaps to have DOT get projects ready in the queue so that we would not lose federal funds if we didn't have those projects ready to go.
And that committee is familiar with that. It's roughly $200 million, and we've had some dialogue here at the table. And substantially more dialogue, I guess, in my office. I guess, as I recall, there hasn't been much at the, on the table about that. But there is a potential for substantial federal monies coming to the state, and we have removed a lot of the projects that DOT had queued up over the last couple of years. So the concern is that we have within DOT some of the larger projects process undertaken. So when and if the federal funds come, which looks like it's reasonably likely, that we would have projects to secure those federal funds so we don't have to return them back to the federal government. So that'll be in, that's one of the amendment requests. Is there other capital amendments that we should be aware of?
Mr. Chairman, yes, and in the, I know the committee does not appreciate surprises, so I would like to tell you there are a couple other amendments. One that will be specifically for the Department of Health and Social Services, one of their efforts to continue to improve the electronic records transfer that should have been in the February 16th amendments that came to you, and we neglected to include that. And we have also been discussing with the Department of Administration their system replacement project. They've been going through a procurement to help really scrub the numbers on that particular project, and we'd like to bring that forward. My goal, Mr. Chairman, is to get those amendments to you. The 60th legislative day is tomorrow. I'm hoping to get those to you, if not later today, first thing tomorrow. Then, as far as I know, the only other things that would be remaining for legislative consideration would be if we're able to get some of the bargaining unit agreements finalized before the end of the month. So we're trying to capture everything that we know about at the moment that could conceivably come before the legislature before your adjournment.
Because as we set our spending level here, and we've been very concerned, the members of this committee over the last several years, as we've all worked together, some of us, you know, fifth year here under this structure, that we increase the financial strength of the state as we move forward and substantially increase our savings components, which we're interested in doing again this year before we do the capital budget. So we're working on that proposal as we speak, and we'll have some of that information out on the table before we do the capital budget package together. But in dealing with the capital budget, we feel it's only appropriate that if the executive branch wants to have appropriations through the legislature, that for the capital side of the equation, that the legislature basically has two-thirds and the executive branch has one-third to keep things fair. So as you increase your appropriation requests, it makes it more difficult for us at this table to hold down our overall spending level, and it creeps into our savings. So we are concerned that we have a robust savings position in 11, because that doesn't, for those watching at home, doesn't finish up to the end of June. And we want to have 2012, the budget year we're working in right now, we want to make sure that that budget is in the red without, excuse me, in the black. It's already in the red. And we want it in the black without using any of our savings components. And you'll see, and we'll work with your office as we move things around to accomplish those goals. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along the same lines, I guess the last year, the governor had his capital budget request in general funds, and there have been substantial increases from last year. So I think that your comments are right on point. The legislature needs to have their input in the capital budget process, and I think that each individual legislator is more aware of the needs of their district than the governor is. So I anticipate that working with the governor's office and the other body, we can look at what we requested last year and look at what the governor requested, there have been increases in the governor's capital budget, and I anticipate that that same trend will follow with the legislative request as well.
We might want to look at the enacted budget. I think there was a little adjustment by the governor for about $301 million on our side last year, so some of which I agree with, some of which is open for discussion.
On that point, there were adjustments, but from the governor's adjustment to the capital budget that we submitted, but we did not modify the governor's capital budget in any way last year. And I think that is important. We tried to work with the governor's office, and we did not modify the governor's budget one iota last year, respecting his position. But we need to work together. I think the Senate Finance Committee of any finance committee in the past has looked for and brought forward savings to give us the financial position in savings that we are today. If anyone is aware of our financial condition, I think it's been the Senate Finance Committee and many of the appropriations, the vast majority of the appropriations that have been submitted for those savings have originated in this committee.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, certainly the governor is very supportive of your efforts to put more funds into savings reserves. Healthy reserves are going to be very important to us as we move forward. And I think the governor has also indicated his willingness to work with you on the overall level of spending and the priorities in the capital budget. And so I know we're willing to work with you and the committee on that.
I would like to reiterate, and it shouldn't go unnoticed, that we at the committee last year did not modify the governor's capital budget. And clearly this year, the appropriation request coming out of the governor's office is exceeding by well over $200 million with this last amendment request from DOT over the enacted budget last year. I think there's so it is a it is a relationship that is dynamic and that can change. So we'll work with you as we go forward. I know there's several items I need to have a discussion with you on, large capital items around the state that you were here in the audience when we went through some of those presentations. And I need to have some dialogue with your office on kind of what your guys' thoughts are on how we move forward with some of these projects and make sure at the end of the day we have economically viable projects that don't go haywire along the way. And then as we also pick up and move forward with some of these smaller regional projects around the state and in our communities. So we need to start that dialogue probably sooner than later, because we're going to start assembling a capital budget here probably this weekend. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and through the chair, and thank you, Karen, for all your work and being a new member to finance. I want to thank you in particular for the extra effort that you've taken to come by my office and really keep me in the loop. Two things I wanted to comment on the language second section. First of all, on page 46, that Life Alaska Fund was something that I created in a bill years ago when I connected up the donating tissue and anatomical gifts, basically, and we allowed Alaskans to donate a dollar. And I have this in the budget as well, but I appreciate the governor putting it in. And so we'll just watch that, how that goes. But I want to say thank you for him putting that in as well. The bigger question, or the bigger point I wanted to make to the chairman, to both the chairman, is the subject of Section 5. And obviously, there's the issue that the two chairmen are looking at, which is a broader one of how we manage the budget and the surplus that we have and what we want it to earn. And now the issue of the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation, which has $424 million in it, what we want to do with that. It's being used in on page 45 for both the Renewable Energy Grant Fund and for part of the AGEA reimbursement, $160 million of that. So that subject's there, but the broader issue for me is AGEA. And I would like to request a part of a day for us to talk and hear an update personally from the governor himself. I would like to have the governor come to this committee and give this committee an update on what he feels is happening with AGIA.
Well, I think we're going to have to, Senator Hoffman and myself will have to discuss about that. I don't want to be having individual members inviting the governor to come
however
and go out.
However you want to do it. I just feel it keeps playing out over and over throughout the budget. In different sections, there are AGIA reimbursements. Different committee chairmen have chosen to deal with it differently. Some have denied it. Some have put in part. Some have waited for the House. But it reflects sort of on the whole system. I think we're all in a holding pattern in that we respect the governor immensely. We respect you. And yet we have constituents saying to us, we don't know if we're putting good money after bad. We would like to know what the status is and whether or not we're, if we're already at a stage where we're going to go into litigation and treble damages, we should know that. Because why put another $160 million into it, if that makes sense? So whatever the process is that the chairman want to lead us down, I guess I just don't want to be a part of voting for or contributing to more good money after bad.
Well, I have similar concerns on the AGIA issue, and that's why we had in the subcommittee had asked for a quarterly breakdown of past expenditures and what they were on, and then quarterly reimbursements going forward, and when the went from 50 to 90% reimbursement. So we'll get that data, and then we can have some discussions amongst ourselves how, if we want to have a special hearing on the AGIA reimbursement. I know that subject is discussed in leadership and how we want to handle that particular issue. There is a lot of concern in the building over the viability of that particular piece of legislation and then the contractual obligations we have. I think all of us are concerned and all of us want to get that gas to market. It's duly noted. We'll take a look at that and work on that. And then on the savings issue component, just for those watching at home, there has been discussions with the governor to have the four co-chairs along with representation from the governor's office work in the interim and have some discussions on how we want to handle the pool of money as far as the management of it and structure it and then within that, I guess within that type of a conversation, but kind of the next tier down is do we want to target any chunks of that in a particular direction, or do we want to keep it as flexible as we can so we can stay nimble at this committee to deal with economic conditions as they're dealt to us. So those discussions will go on over the interim, and hopefully next winter when we're sitting here, we're going to take head on some of those issues that you brought up as far as, you know, there's issues some folks want to have particular endowments set up for their own area of interest or what have you, but we also have capital budget issues and operating issues going forward, and there's a concern too that when we're all gone and the philosophy at this table changes, and for those that have been around a lot longer than I have, for years this committee here played a lot of the smoke and mirrors and reclassifying fund sources and so on and so forth, and we've cleaned all that up, and there's a lot more transparency today, and I'd like to see when 10 years from now when we go back in and check on the legislatures as we're all retired, that they're not back into the smoke and mirrors game, that the public can actually see what's going on at the table. And they don't have the ability to go into this huge savings component that we've struggled so hard to set up and be able to take out billions at a whack, because they don't want to sit at the table and make the hard decisions dealing with the budget. And now those funds, those savings, I'm not talking about the permanent fund, I'm talking about our $13, $14 billion in cash we have piled up. Some of us want to see, you know, several billion higher. That lasts for decades, if not potentially in perpetuity for the state. So we'll work on that. I mean, that's some of the things that would be nice over our two-year life cycle here at the table, that we leave the place a lot better than when we received it. But we have any other comments? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Mr. Rayfield, for your your comments. I'd just like to mention one thing that is occurring more in my office anyhow is comments from folks that are becoming somewhat confused over how we move forward from this point as the budget seems to grow a little bit. Operating budgets obviously have a tendency to do that based on inflation. And with the thought in mind of if we are in fact looking at changing the oil taxation as it exists at this point in time, if there's been an analysis of how long the states, and that is assuming that in fact that any of that savings would reinvested in the state, which I understand there really isn't a plan or any contractual potential exists to ensure that a portion, if not all of that money that could be potentially returned to the oil industry would be expended in the state of Alaska and reinvestment, and that reinvestment probably by most people's estimations is 7 or 8 years with it before there would be any potential return on that money. So therefore an analysis, which we had somewhat of an analysis done over the last couple of years on how long the state's revenue or savings would hold out to make sure we had balanced budgets in the future. So it's not necessarily a question, more of a concern that's issued, and I'm having difficulty explaining to people how that would work out because of the lack of information coming basically from the administration as to how potentially those things would balance out.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, I know that the Department of Revenue and our office have been working through our long-range plan model, looking at what the potential impact on our reserve accounts are based on certain assumptions, because that's really what we have in the 10-year plan, our specific assumptions. If you go out and look on our site right now, we have, I think there are 6 different scenarios at different projections of spending. There are a couple of different revenue assumptions as well. All of those will change, of course, with the spring forecast and modeling. Our internal work that Mr. Butcher will be sharing with the committees on as they're discussing the governor's reduction in oil taxes will show some of those slides that if we do have our spending discipline and manage those reserves, we will still have reserves in 2020 when we're expecting, you know, the reinvestment should occur before 2020. But that's the analysis that's going on right now to be shared with the committees and with the public.
Thank you.
Senator Thomas, if and when that bill arrives at the finance table, the finance committee, I'm sure, will be very interested in taking a look at the fiscal impacts, long-range fiscal impacts on the state, of those type of revenue changes, and we'll be asking the administration to come in and show us their response. But my expectations of the committee, I think we take a pretty dim view of liquidating our hard-earned savings that we were just talking about of 14, 15 billion or whatever it is at the end of this year by year 2020. So some of us are going to be very protective of that. I think it would be an absolute disaster to spend that money down and sit here in the year 2020 with the operating account a third higher and try to meet the obligations of the state. We'd have an absolute financial calamity on our hands. So we'll go through that in the appropriate time. It's not really a detailed issue for the Resources Committee to deal with, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest at this table. So that was a good subject to bring up, just so they know that to take the time between now and whenever it gets here so they're prepared. Any other comments, questions, concerns? Okay, thank you, Ms. Rayfield, and my office will work with you over the next several days as we move forward and we continue to move the state forward in a positive manner in job creation and infrastructure build out. This will conclude this morning's meeting. We're going to reconvene at 5 p.m. tonight. Don't forget 5 p.m. tonight to begin the statewide public testimony. We are not setting specific time slots per community. If you have constituents that would like to testify, they should go to their LIO and sign up to testify by 5 p.m. this evening. We want to minimize the use of the off-net lines but we will accommodate call-ins as necessary. It's a nice way to say the legislative information offices work a little more efficiently tying in here and allocating time around, but some people, I understand, will have difficulty getting there. And then we're going to rotate between the audience here in Juneau and the LIOs around the state as long as necessary to take the public testimony within reason. The chairman doesn't plan on being here till midnight. But normally we finish up in an hour and a half to hour and 45 minutes is normally about the length of the time. So we'll just plan on being here from 5 to 7. And depending on the sort of turnout, you know, the testimony will be limited to 2 to 3 minutes. I'll just have to kind of play that by ear. If there's a lot of people, we have to ratchet it back down to 2. If there's not too many people, we give them a little more time. I just want to make sure everybody has, you know, the opportunity to put their 2 cents in. So we'll see everybody back at 5 p.m. Meeting adjourned.